Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Episode 14, guys. We are your hosts. I am Sarah.
I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Kristen. Just reminding you that Comadres y Comics is a podcast highlighting the female and Latinx presence in comics, whether it be as creators, characters, or as a fan base.
Yes. Yes. Excellent, guys. So, I don't know if you heard our last podcast, but we actually had a Batman piñata raffle, and Cole won. I text Cole, no response. I called Cole, and we're going to try one more time on the air.
¿Dónde estás, Cole?
Señor Cole.
Señor Cole, ¿dónde estás?
Okay, cool. And it's a pretty cool Batman piñata. Everybody at Free Comic Book Day who saw it was like, I want to have that piñata. And we had a bowl full of
people
who signed up. Mm-hmm. And Cole was the lucky guy.
The person you are trying to reach is not accepting calls at this time. Please try your call again later.
Boo.
La persona con la que intenta comunicarse no acepta llamadas en este momento.
Case we don't know.
In case we didn't understand the first time.
The telephone company knew that it was Comadres y Comics calling.
All right, guys. So we tried calling Cole one more time on the air. So what are we going to do, ladies? What are we going
to
do?
Well, I think the only fair thing to do is to make sure that somebody gets that awesome Batman
piñata.
So I have the all the bowl here full of all the people who placed their name in to win the piñata. So I'm going to go ahead and choose another one right now and see if we can get a hold of this person. So are we ready to pick the winner?
Yes.
Okay. So our next winner is... Dun, dun, dun! Kay Winters.
Ooh. Yes, Kay Winters. You are the winner of the Batman Piñata. And I will be contacting you probably tomorrow and see if we can get this piñata over to you pronto.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Excellent.
Please, people. We're dying. Like,
Just take it. All right, guys. So now we are going into Chisme de la Semana. What is your chisme, girls? Who wants to go first?
I will go ahead and start. I think that most everybody has heard this chisme, but for those of you who haven't, and for even those of you who have, I'm going to repeat it because it's awesome chisme. And also, it's kind of on the tails of our Young Avengers, America Chavez talk we did for our last episode. But it's been all over the internet that Brooklyn Nine-Nine actress Stephanie Beatriz is interested in playing the America Chavez role in the MCU.
Whoa. Nice.
Now, I don't know if either of you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but her character on that show is Rose Diaz, and she's so just like, it's like a salty, like no emotion and like very tough, like police officer. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like she would be perfect for America Chavez because she is, America is just so like straightforward and to the point, and at least that's how she's written. Mm-hmm. And I think that Stephanie would be really, really awesome at it. But something that hasn't been talked about lately, and actually somebody who's been talking about wanting this role for quite some time, is also Gina Rodriguez from Jane the Virgin.
Yes. I love Gina Rodriguez.
I do too.
Did you guys see her in Philly?
Gina Rodriguez.
You guys see her in Philly Brown?
No.
Oh, that was so good. She played a rapper, and it was like hard for me to wrap my head around Jane the Virgin, that funny quirky girl, is like a tough rapping chick from like, you know, the bad side of town.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, like her, what do you call it? Her range is amazing.
That's what I was thinking. It's funny because I only know her from Jane the Virgin,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't click with me. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought how kind of cool it would be to see her range and to see if she could really pull it off. I mean, with Stephanie, I think it's a given, mm-hmm. because of the character that we've already seen her play. But I'm sure that they're both amazing, talented actresses, and they both would do amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
and on a side note, Jane the Virgin is playing Carmen Sandiego in the next animated
series.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Very exciting.
I remember.
They were, they also commented how she could have done a live-action Carmen Sandiego because she does a lot of, like, I don't know what you call it when you do the fighting, like, training fighting thing. I don't exercise. I don't know. But when they're in the ring with little gloves and fighting.
Uh-huh, like
yeah.
kickboxing?
Yeah, sort of like that. Okay. Yeah, so... Yeah. So
I don't train. I don't know how. Well, the one cool thing that about the story that is going around about Stephanie Beatrice is that not only is she saying that she would like to play America, but she also is saying that if she plays it, she would like Gabby Rivera to write.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my
nice.
God.
Yes.
So,
yeah, so Gabby Rivera, for those of you who remember when we talked about it, she is the current writer for the America comic that is out right now that is on barely issue 3. Tons of time for you to catch up. I ordered all 1, 2, and 3. We should have them in the shop, and yes. It's an amazing story.
Excellent.
Absolutely amazing. So my chisme de la semana is... So, Stranger Comics had a panel at the Phoenix Comic Con yesterday, and it was announced that Jay Lee...
I just saw that.
Yeah, Jay Lee, for fans of Jay Lee, is going to have his own creator... Well, his creator-owned comic, and it's going to be called Faye. It's going to be written by Sebastian Jones and Daryl May, art by Jay Lee, and lettering and production design by Joshua Cosine. Faye is about a boy named William Wilde who falls in love with a fairy named Faye.
I think they could have been a little bit more...
they could have been, like, they were running low on specifics. But there is a cover for it that I will post later on our Facebook page that it looks absolutely beautiful. Jay Lee himself does, like, some really nice... artwork that I really like. So I can't wait to read this. And I really like fantasy comics, and Stranger Comics is so good at publishing and putting forward, like, really cool fantasy-based work.
Yeah, if you are a fan of fantasy world building, definitely Stranger Comics is a publisher that you need to check out. You might... recognize Stranger from their book that gets a lot of attention called Niobe. It's co-written. Sebastian Jones co-writes it with Amandla Stenberg, who was the actress in The Hunger Games. She's cute little Rue who doesn't really see a good ending to the movie. But, she is the co-writer of Niobe, and it gets so much attention out there, not only because she's writing it, but because it's just a really good book. And
excellently written.
It's, and the art is really, really great, too.
It's absolutely beautiful. And I really like Stranger Comics and the work that they produce. And they were doing this amazing Vampire Hunter D comic that, which another half of my chisme, I think, has been canceled.
Oh, it has?
Yeah.
Oh.
And because issue number 2 was supposed to come out in January. And issue number 3 was, like, slated for even later on. But when checking on Diamond, it said canceled.
Oh.
And that could either mean that they've moved the date.
Yeah.
Or that it has been
I'm thinking that it's something that they want to continue doing, because I know that it was a big coup for them to even get the rights to that character. I mean, Vampire Hunter D has a huge following.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
years.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I think probably it's just that they have, I mean, Stranger is a very small, company, and, it's literally 3 people doing all the behind the scenes work, and they work their butts off. They're at all the big conventions. They're traveling all over the place. There's just so much that needs to be done that maybe just, I think, they're falling a little bit behind on schedule, but I can't imagine that they're not going to pick it back up at some point.
I know, and it's something that I really want to read, because I have been reading the Vampire Hunter D novels since, like, high school. Mm-hmm. That's when I first found out about them. And it's just, I love them so much.
Yeah.
And I really do hope they continue with it. But that's a little, that's more like, that is a true chisme, like a rumor. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Like,
we're not sure if it's true, but we're going to tell it.
We're just like, we got to share the dirt, yo.
I like that. I like that. Well, we kind of think it's happening, but we're not sure. But mm-hmm. that's okay. It's good to know that there might be, like, it's either going to be canceled or there might be a delay. So that's good. That's good information to have. Mm-hmm. My chisme de la semana is I have not seen the movie Split, but I have seen Unbreakable. And these are both M. Night Shyamalan movies. And they just announced that there's going to be a sequel called Glass. And it will be starring Bruce Willis, Samuel Jackson, and James McAvoy. If you guys remember, James McAvoy is also Professor X. But but yeah, the release date is set for January 18th, 2019. But I'm really excited only because I've been waiting for an Unbreakable sequel forever.
I've been waiting for any movie that I enjoy.
M. Night Shyamalan forever.
You don't like M. Night Shyamalan?
No, I liked Unbreakable and I liked Sixth Sense. After that, I've watched quite a few. I haven't found another movie that I enjoyed. Yeah,
I enjoyed them all. I really did. I thought what he was doing was really cool. He got a lot of flack saying that he was copying other movies or Twilight Zone episodes, which I kind of get, but he's making them in movies, so I really like it. The Following, was it The Following? Okay, I know it was The Village, Lady in the Water. I can't think of the other ones, but I enjoyed them.
What
all
was the alien one alien. Where the guy, they were all sitting with aluminum hats.
Oh my god, yes, that was so great. Signs.
That, like, Close Encounters or something?
It's no. It's Signs.
Signs, oh, that's Signs. Right, yes. Yes.
Signs, sorry.
Close Encounters.
I don't know, man. I was just like, I thought, like, that's what, that's
aliens,
what I thought.
Aliens, Close Encounters.
Aliens, Close Encounters. Like,
close
I was
enough,
just, like,
close
I was,
enough.
I was just thinking, I just thought, you just said aliens, and I'm just like, Close Encounters. It just ran out. I'm not very familiar with M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong's work.
Yeah, that's, I used to call him that too. No, I'm like, but I can't even say his last name. But
seriously, I mean, Sixth Sense was, which one came out first, Sixth Sense or Unbreakable?
Sixth Sense.
Okay, so I mean, I remember that being such, like, groundbreaking.
Oh, it, yeah.
And everyone losing their mind and trying to, back then it was easy to keep the spoiler under wraps because there was no social media and internet.
Well, yeah.
And so people going in were generally surprised. And Unbreakable, I remember, I mean, this is before I was into comics and any of that. And I just remember being so intrigued and enthralled with this storyline of, like, good versus evil. And it was just so, and, you know, the average Joe having these powers and, I really, really enjoyed it a lot. So I'm actually, despite everything in me telling me that it's not going to be good, I'm looking forward to this movie.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I agree. Ladies and gentlemen, we did go to the convention and we passed out a lot of raffle red tickets, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a lot of raffles going on today in the episode. So today, right now, we will be raffling the Stormtrooper piñata. So, Kristen, if you please.
All right. So, the winner for the Stormtrooper piñata is so cute. I can't.
Isn't it cute?
I don't want to give him away. Okay. The winner for the Stormtrooper piñata is ticket number 2067706. You are the winner of the Stormtrooper Piñata, and we will, we're going to wait for them to contact us, or?
Yes. Okay. You have to contact us. Let us know you have the Stormtrooper Piñata ticket. Take a picture of your ticket and just, you can just instant messenger us, or I think it's called DM.
direct message.
Yes, direct message into our Comadres y Comics Facebook and
or will, Instagram or
whatever, Instagram,
yeah.
Or
Twitter.
And we will send you that wherever you want us to mail it to.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yay! Congratulations, ticket 706.
Nice. So, girls, we went to the first ever East LA Comic Con.
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
It was so amazing. I am just so still happy and just riding on a high of the amazing community that came together there at the plaza and stopped by our table and spoke to us and talked to us about our podcast and just genuinely was excited to meet all these people and talk to them about what we do here and to get their excitement in turn to learn about our podcast.
Yeah, it was, I'm still so amazed that there was such a strong presence of people that
yes.
the line went on, like, for, like, hours.
Yeah, so it opened, what, at 10 or 11?
11.
Okay,
it opened at 11. Yeah.
The line was around the corner. At 3 o'clock, we had people telling us the line was still around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's
absolutely.
Amazing. And I'm just so glad that the Latino community, and even people who weren't, like, Latinos, they still came out to this
supported.
Event and supported it and
yeah.
were there. And I'm really glad that they stopped by to at least indulge us and just be like, oh, what are they doing? Like, and...
Oh, they were indulging, all right.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. We baited them with conchas.
Well, I thought that was really cool. I really loved that everybody was so positive. I know we were waiting in line. I know that it was hot.
Yeah.
I know it was crowded, but I felt that generally, overall, there was a real positive, a real patience amongst a lot of the people that went. A
yes.
lot of the people were mm-hmm. super just happy to talk to us, even though, like you said, we baited them with conchas and such. But but I felt like they were genuinely listening to us. We mm-hmm. got a lot of support from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I just loved it.
It's
loved the whole experience.
Interesting that you mentioned that... people were waiting out. I mean, it was like 90-something degree weather that day.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was so
and,
hot. Yeah.
And there were people standing outside in the sun, in the heat for a very, very, very long time. And I met someone today who said that they even mentioned to the to Peter, who was one of the founders and organizers, that he was so surprised that they didn't have any problems with all these people that were waiting in line and
oh,
in the heat
yeah.
and just, you know, tensions rise when people get fussy.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to him was, you know what, I thought about that as well, and I think it's just, it speaks to the strong sense of community that this
mm-hmm.
event instilled in people.
Definitely, I do think so, because it's something that you want to, like, support, and also just, like, you don't want to be known as that one person who started that one fight. Come on, that's, like, really, you're going to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, I just feel like, a lot of people like the idea that was free, but I feel that the people that were organizing are people who have gone to cons,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they, you know, take that under consideration. Like I saw when I went out to the car a few times, I saw that when people were leaving, they would let people in. So they
yeah.
had a real good control of crowd control,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
and people were just relatively patient. I really love the fact that there's a lot of vloggers and a lot of
mm-hmm.
photographers.
Yes, oh, yeah. So
and
many.
The LA
yeah.
Weekly was there.
Yeah.
So I felt that mm-hmm. it was like a lot of people supporting each other's medias, and I felt that was just so... like familia, you know, that was awesome.
Yeah,
yes, your
definitely.
Pink chongo is
yeah.
famous.
It sure is.
Oh my God. They caught my good side.
I know. So because of that, I felt that it was just amazing, and I am just excited to go and to the next one. I mean, the next.
Yes.
I mean,
oh,
I just,
yeah,
I have ideas. I have things I want to do. I want to have a Snapchat filter. I mean, you name it.
We got ideas abound. Like, we have so many. We would really love to attend the second
yeah,
one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just amazing to meet not only the congoers, but also the creators that were there.
Oh,
A lot of the creators were Latino or women or parts of other ethnicities that definitely are not the majority when it comes to comic book industry. And so it was just really awesome to be able to see all the diversity that was there in this one convention.
So talented. Yes. I mean, I met this artist who, just a small reference, but I met this artist who etches into linoleum and etches into wood and then presses his images onto... Okay, that's cool. presses his images onto paper, and this specific paper that sometimes the images make indentation, sort of like an embossing. So I was just like, whoa, you that's freaking are awesome. Cool. Yes. Mm-hmm. So overall, I mean, I loved it. It was such a great experience, and I'm so happy that we got to be part of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So am I. I'm really, really happy that we were chosen to have a table there and to connect with the community and to connect with people who also are comic book readers, or people who might not be into comics but were interested in learning about comics and actually mentioned how this might be a way for them to learn about books that they might want to read. So I think let us be your comic book pushers.
Yes, let us be your
gateway.
Your gateway. Let us be your first hit.
Oh my god. I'd like to special shout out. I told her I would shout her out on our next podcast episode, but Tonantzin Mondragon, she came to our table and she was talking to us about a lot of fangirling out.
Oh, right, I remember.
She was just like so knowledgeable about, you know, comic books and about her passion to read.
Yeah.
And she loves to read, and she's a big comic book fan, so shout out to her. She was really interesting to talk to.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time, but there was just such a big crowd and it was so hot.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Such a rush of people.
Yeah, exactly. And if for any reason you felt like we didn't talk to you very much, we're very sorry. There was just so many people, so many things happening, but thank you so much for stopping by and saying hello.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully you took one of our cards and you're listening to this podcast and you are following us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and always, always feel free to reach out to us there as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Definitely. We're open to all messages.
Absolutely. So, Kristen, you picked up some comic books at this convention?
Yes, so one of the things that I was really looking forward to when we went to the East LA Comic Con was meeting all of these creators. And one of the things that we had talked about before we went was really wanting to highlight the creators that we met there at the convention. And so I went around and picked up some books. I picked up, I would say, like maybe... six or so before the convention started, and then after that I told myself, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna get more, but that never happened because it was just constantly no break at all, which was amazing.
Definitely
with the people coming through. But the things that I was able to pick up, we're going to go do a review of three of them today. That's what we wanted to hit some over the next couple of podcasts, but the first one that we're going to do today, we're going to do three, and I am really excited to talk about these. These are all books that you can't really get from Diamond, which is, if you don't know, Diamond is the main comic distributor for all comic book shops. That's how we do our orders. And if you are a comic book publisher, you have to go to Diamond and ask them to distribute your comic. Mm-hmm. And they have some stipulations, and one of them is that you have to basically agree to print and sell so many of these comics before they will even take you. And so what that means is that some smaller publishing companies and some obviously, small independent creators can't meet those demands and are not able to get their books into Diamond, which again is the number one, in fact, the only comic distributor, not only here in the United States, but in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is, it really sucks for small publishers and independent creators because they can't meet those guidelines, and so they can't get their book a lot of times to a large number of comic book shops. And so what they do is they have to depend on going to these small
conventions, local conventions, and meet the fans face to face, create new fans, talk up the book, and just really hustle to get their work out there. And so I think that's why it's so super important to go to these conventions and take the time to meet these creators and talk to them. And us here at Comadres y Comics have the capability of being able to share these books with you and hopefully garner some attention and some praise for them, because the books, for sure, the ones that we picked today definitely are worthy of that.
Absolutely. I agree. I love the way you explained it in such great detail, because a lot of the people don't know why certain comic books aren't available at the local comic shops, or why they're not distributed, you know, widely. So that was really good information to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know if there's a specific order that we want to go in, but the first book that we're going to do is Quinces.
Yes.
So Quinces is actually a book that we had talked about in a previous podcast. It was either my chisme or on my radar.
I believe it was on your radar.
Yeah. Fanbase Press is a small publishing company, and Fanbase also is the company, the publisher who does Hero Hotel, that Yehudi Mercado is the writer of, and I think we've talked about him in here as well. He's a Latino creator, and we should actually do his book at some point. But I had this on my radar for a while since it was announced, because it is all about a girl who... I mean, the title's Quince, so right there, you know that it has probably something to do with the fact that she's turning 15. And this book is all about Lupe, or Lupita, who, when she turns 15, she realizes that she has some sort of superpowers.
Mm. Exactly.
I think that that's amazing, because any of you Latinos that are out there listening, or even those of you who have Latino friends, know that the quinceañera is like the big deal for girls who are Latina. So I think I didn't have a quinceañera, actually, when I turned 15. I don't know if either of you did, but...
I had a 16.
Okay.
Because, like, when money problems for my 15, and I was being a rebellious teenager. And then at 16, I was just like, okay, maybe I kind of do want a party.
Yeah.
So then we threw a really big one, and I got to wear the big poofy dress.
See, I didn't get either. I got my grandmother put in a whole bunch of money and bought me a used car.
That's better, actually.
Yeah.
So looking back at it, for sure, I know that having a car in high school was a huge deal, and to be able to have that was definitely a luxury. But I don't have any quince or sweet 16 memories.
Let me tell you, it was late.
But no, I mean, working in the Latino community and working a lot with after school programs, I worked a lot with families who, I don't know, I mean, because I would see the homes they lived in and, you know, the struggles that they had and the ways that they would ask me for help. But when that quinceañera would come around, it was like they were millionaires.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. It's shocking to see what kind of party they throw.
Yes.
And I mean, like, the
they
even to the
go all out.
Even to the smallest detail.
Yes.
From the person carrying a bottle of tequila with little shot glasses that goes to every table and serves shots. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah, it's incredibly crazy.
And you know, the Gutierrez's have to do better than the Gomez's.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let me tell you, like, I've been to some wild ass quinces. Like, back in the day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, like, it was always all a competition. So I was kind of glad when I had my 16, because ain't competing with nobody.
Yeah,
right.
I was just like, because it's a quince. Who the hell has a sweet 16?
Yeah.
Like, so, but apparently I did.
I've heard that, though. I've heard it a lot from girls who are a little bit more, I would say, Americanized, I guess. And where it's really like tradition for the family where they want to do it. A lot of times the girls kind of see that. The ones that I've dealt with and that I worked with saw that as kind of a cultural thing that they didn't really want, that maybe they were trying to distance themselves from. The specific ones that I know that had Sweet 16s, they wanted to do the more like American thing. Yeah.
American thing.
Yeah, I had a quinceañera. I try to do like more of a do-it-yourself thing. So like it was like a lot of sleepless nights, kind of, you know. It was it was beautiful.
Yeah.
But it was really hard. Just, you know, organizing everything, like you have to do it yourself, and so it was difficult in that sense, but it was beautiful memories. I actually want to transform my VHS to DVD. Bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, you have it on tape?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah. You got it.
Yeah, videography or whatever it's called. Yeah.
We're going to have a screening. Sarah.
Oh,
man. Quinceañera.
Oh, dude.
It's BYOB.
Yes, absolutely.
So I really enjoyed Quinceañera because not only is it a Latina protagonist, but most of the storyline is just about her and her family. Mm-hmm. And we get introduced to her where she basically just self-identifies as being a quote-unquote total nerd.
Right.
she tells us that her favorite thing to do is to fangirl, to watch fangirl shows on Netflix. And I think the cutest thing that she says after that I really, really liked is she says, even though the superheroes are basically always white people.
Yeah, exactly.
So which makes it even more awesome to me that she's kind of like lamenting that, man, there's nobody on TV that looks like me that has superpowers. But in the end, she's the one who's going to get them.
Exactly.
Hey. Yeah.
It's a foreshadowing. I super loved when she introduces her family.
Yes.
Like she's like... Yeah. I actually, she says, I love my mom, but she shows her love by nagging me all the time. My dad, you know, he shows his love by being super embarrassing. And then the little sister's super obsessed with her, which she's cool with, but at the same time, she's like, I want her to stop sometimes. Mm-hmm. And her brother, who uses his powers for evil. And the cool part about the brother is if you see the drawing, he has the claws made out of like a fork and a spoon and a knife.
Oh,
like Wolverine.
I miss that. Oh, yes, he does.
And it's those little treasures I love this story.
Oh, that's awesome.
I also love the art. I love the part where she's trying on the dress with their abuelita.
Yes.
And the way the face expressions are drawn, I really feel it. Mm-hmm. I really feel like their dialogue is amazing, too.
Her abuela is like... She's really sassy. I really liked her character.
She's
a lot.
Like, how many boys fell in love with you today? Just as many as yesterday.
Yeah.
It's such a cute conversation.
Yeah.
A cute relationship she has with her grandmother, which I really love.
The really cool thing one of the cool things about this comic book is right now it is it's available on Comixology, and we have a hard copy. But the cool thing about both Comixology and the hard copies is that they're both available in not only just English, but also in Spanish.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was super, super cool, and definitely, I think, kind of a key to, introducing a lot more Latino readers to the comic book, style. Of storytelling.
I actually read both the English and the Spanish.
Okay.
I really loved it. Yeah.
I didn't.
No, I loved that they would do that, and I thought it was really cool that you just kind of flip the book over and you're able to read it in a different language.
Yeah.
And I like the use of genial and stuff like little words that I sometimes use, like that I don't feel a lot of people use, and I'm just like, oh, it's so cool.
It's still in use, and it's like, it makes a good, like, bilingual book.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If you only know Spanish and you want to learn English, mm-hmm. that's a good one. If you want a bit more practice in reading Spanish, if you want to teach your kid to read in Spanish or to help them read in English, it's a perfect book for that. That's absolutely relatable.
And just
except for the superhero part.
Right, exactly. And the cool thing is, like, you actually learn about her superpower, and also she learns about her superpower on the very last page of the story. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I would definitely continue reading. I really liked it. And a little side note about the creators of this book, Kit Steinkellner. I'm probably butchering her name.
No, I think that sounds right.
She actually worked on The Beginning of Everything. It's an Amazon Prime TV series about Zelda, F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife.
Uh-huh.
So I watched that. I love that show. Oh, I love that show.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. I read that on the book, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I didn't know this. I would have talked your ear off. And Emma Stein... Kellner, she's a graduate from Stanford's Department of Feminist, Gender, and Sexual Studies. So that was like, whoa.
Cool.
That was like, boom.
Nice.
In your face.
We don't get that, the story component in this first issue, but when I first read about Quince, they disclosed that she, Lupin, not only gets her powers on her 15th birthday, but the powers only last while she's 15.
Oh.
So she's only going to have these powers for 1 year.
Oh.
So that is, to me, really interesting to kind of see character development of what she's going to do with that, knowing that that she's only going to have them for this 1 year.
I'm sorry, but did you guys get the hint from the grandmother that possibly she her knew? Grandmother knew?
Yeah. Yes.
Grandmother said, like, your life changes. And
yes.
Then she's like,
it'll never be the same.
It doesn't really. And then it was just like, oh, you don't know. You're like, you don't know. Like, I'm guessing
So it shows here that they have issues 1, 2, 3, and 4. So I'm not sure if that's going to be the end. I do know that a trade is scheduled to come out during the summer.
Oh, cool.
And once it does come out, I definitely would be interested in continuing on and reading and maybe doing a full episode on the entire 4 issues.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. No, I would love to do that. I can't wait to find out what happens.
Yes.
Yeah, same here.
and then you also picked up another book.
Okay. So, this book is called Monte Gomez is the Luchador.
What?
Nice.
And this says it's produced by Labishka Inc., which is a very small, I think, self-publishing company. The writer of this book is, his name is, what was it?
Jandro Gamboa.
Yes. and then nice. The art is Bernice Tali. And I met both of these creators there at the East LA Comic Con, and they were so super nice. And actually, Bernice came to our table and was talking to us, and just in the conversation when we asked her what table she was there, she gave us a brief little rundown of what this book was about. And she basically says to me, so picture this. This Monte Gomez goes to the swap meet and buys a box, and it's full of luchador masks, and each one has a separate superpower. And that was it.
That was it. Like,
we were sold.
I immediately fell in love with that storyline. Like,
exactly.
Like, short, simple, sweet, and
utterly
awesome.
Sold. Awesome. Yeah. Just the swap meet
reference
alone.
The swap meet, like,
where do you get your superpowers from?
The swap meet. Like, oh my God.
Where
no,
I get
like,
my socks.
Like, you guys have no idea, because, like, my mom would take me as a kid to the swap meet, like, all the time.
All the time. It was, like, Sunday after church.
Our swap meet in my hometown, it's called the Remate, And I don't know what that means in English. Everyone calls it remate, but I don't know what that means. But anyway, it's the Monday sale. Our swap meet in our hometown is on Monday. Mm-hmm. So we generally only got to go when it was a 3-day weekend. So like this weekend is Memorial Day weekend and we already knew we were going to go to the remate on Monday. And the remate had everything. There was the fruits and vegetables section. There was a mm-hmm. section where they were selling the animals. And not until I was older did I realize that these animals were for cooking and not for being pets. Oh no! There was the people selling the furniture and the clothing. But then the favorite part of mine was the part in the back where it was basically like people coming and having their garage sale or yard sale mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. and it was just like a treasure hunt.
Oh, absolutely. Time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was my favorite part right after the guy driving up and down the aisles with the pan dulce.
Side note, remate means auction.
Ah!
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
I just learned something new. I had never knew what that meant.
You know what? It sounded like something with the included in the sales kind of category,
but
I wasn't exactly sure. So I looked it up. It was auction. That makes sense. Yeah.
It does make sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
No, I love the swap meet. I haven't gone because I don't go because I know I'm going to waste money. So that's one of the reasons I don't go.
Is it truly wasting, though, when everything is a deal?
I know what you mean. I do, but sometimes I end up buying things that, like, I really don't need and I just want to have. It's, yeah. Like, I have these little bottles that I've never used, but they're so cute.
Yeah. I feel you. Even today, I went to the fanzine convention downtown, and every table, I barely made it through the first aisle, both sides, and I had already spent like $50. And I was like, why am I doing this? I don't even need these things. I'm already complaining about all the reading I can't do already. But like everybody had such cool stuff.
I know. It's so exciting when there's new cute things.
Yeah, and $2 here, $1 there, $5 here. Yeah, it just adds up super fast.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
We
love the swap meet.
The swap meet is just thing. It's like a cultural thing. Like, you've always gone to the swap meet for something. But, no, for me, I really love the swap meet, especially the one that my mom used to take us to, because me and my brother, it was always like a freaking maze in there.
Yeah.
So me and him would run around, and we would, like, hide. Like, there was a place that sold just, like, communion dresses or, mm-hmm. like Primera Comunión stuff. And then there was another one that sold, like, only toys, and another one that sold, like, a food stall and everything, and me and him would always just, like, have a blast as kids. And then there was, like, always, like, that one place that, like, sold the miscellaneous stuff of, like, boxes, like, and they just have, like, a box of toys or a box of jewelry, and it was cheap, so my mom would give me, like, $1 or $2, and I'd be like, here you go, like, a little freaking chubby five-year-old handing this guy money, like, he's just like, okay.
That's the coolest thing, I think. Mm-hmm. So for this story, I was actually initially captured by the first page. The hook was just amazing. It says, but this isn't a story about the town I grew up in. This is a story about how I grew up in this town. And I thought that was such a great line. It just hooked me right then and there. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it just begins telling us a story about how he got his superpowers. The guy's name, they call him Monty, but his name is Montezuma Hector Gutierrez Moreno, or Monty.
Right. And I was just telling Jen right before we started that it says that that's what his name is, but then the title is Monte Gomez. Where'd the Gomez come from?
Where did the Gomez come from? That's the real real mystery here.
Oh my god, you're right. I didn't realize that. That's
I'm
weird.
Like, wait, did the writers like make a change and then forget that they did, or like what? Because
or maybe his stage name will be Monte Gomez.
I don't know.
Who knows?
But that's
a mystery that
now
needs to be
we
solved.
Have to keep reading to find out where Gomez came from.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really loving this character. I love each character. I love the friend. He's so cool. Like, he's so, like, surfer dude. I love him.
Yeah.
They've been friends since they were four.
He's a complete bro. He's like, original bro. Like, bro.
So, Monte and his friend and his girlfriend, it seems to me, are probably, like, in their early 20s. Like, 21, 22, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because the girlfriend is talking about going to grad school. Mm-hmm. And so I'm assuming that that means that that's about the age that they're at. But but Monte is, like, really, like,
he's just in a rut.
Yeah, he's just really okay with his job that he has at the swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going and having, you know, his day at work and coming home and playing video games. And he's just super, just like, okay, I'm happy with, and he even says that to his roommate, I'm happy with where I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, exactly.
He has figured out a system, a schedule.
Yeah.
He has his daily thing, and once you fall into that rhythm,
mm-hmm.
it's very hard to break it.
It really mm-hmm. is.
Super hard.
And like I said, the dialogue with all these characters is really well written. I really like the sassiness and mm-hmm. the quirkiness mm-hmm. and all of that. I especially like how the girlfriend explained it. Says, I know where I'm going, but until you know where you're going, I won't know where we're going.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, so clever. So very, very clever.
So that's
clever.
Like the first little conflict that the main character has is that his girlfriend is really pushing him to make big boy decisions.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to go to college, and she wants to be a social worker, and unfortunately, where they live, they don't have that program. So she knows that regardless of what happens between her and her boyfriend, she has to move away.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was really a great character development for her. I don't remember what her name is, but because so often I remember as a girl often just seeing in movies or reading in books that girls and women tended to be written to make their life decisions based on what the men were doing in their life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so for her to be able to make that statement of, you know, and until I know where you're going, mm-hmm. I'm not going to know where we're going.
Yeah.
So that was a really bold statement, and it showed just, like, the strong character that she was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And she's very mature, and mm-hmm. she knows what she wants.
Mm-hmm. And she wants him. She loves mm-hmm. him. She mm-hmm. wants to stay with him, but she's not going to sacrifice her career.
She's not going to let that hold her back.
Yeah.
And exactly. I love that.
I did too.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like I said, I love the dialogue. This is one of my favorite books that you picked up. I can't wait to read the rest to see what happens, because the dialogue is just, I really fell in love with the writing. The writing mm-hmm. style is really cute and clever and very, very well written. I really loved it. So the masks, he gets in a swap meet, and it's a mask that gives him the power of electricity from mm-hmm. his hands.
Yeah.
And then the other one gives him, like, cat-like reflexes.
Yes. I mm-hmm. thought that was so awesome.
Yeah.
It's not... It's the power of the panther.
Yeah. Right.
It's not power just any panther. Cat. It's a panther.
It's a panther.
And the other one helps him fly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, like, when he tells his friend about what's going on, he's like, dude, you know, like, we were raised on comics, video games, and wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you gotta do. You gotta be a superhero.
You gotta be a superhero.
Yeah. And he's reluctant with this life. He's stuck in his rut. He loves the way his life is going. He doesn't want to rock the boat. He's reluctant to take on the mantle mm-hmm. of being a superhero. And he's like, dude, just, you know, like, our community is being, like, plagued from, you know, his friend who's, like, the bro dude. He kind of has this clear moment where he's like, look outside, there's nothing out there, the lights don't even work, like, the mm-hmm. kids aren't outside playing, there's our you know, friend from high school, he's a meth addict, he tried to rob the store, and now, you know, like, he's a tweaker, like, this is really going on in our community, and you can mm-hmm. really make a difference.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't know.
I think that was my favorite thing about the comic, is that it was very lighthearted,
mm-hmm.
but it managed to hit home, like, some deep, like messages and stuff, and like it was very real. And like, and what you were saying about the dialogue, I do love the dialogue a lot because it felt natural.
Absolutely.
Because it felt like it's something that I would have like I've had a conversation like that with my girlfriend, well, ex-girlfriend, and like I've talked with my best friend in something, well, not about being a superhero, but like what can we do to like change our community kind of thing. And like, and it's just like, and not even like we were having like a deep discussion, it was just us like we were just like hanging out and we just talk about these things come up. And that's what I really love about the book, is the natural feel to it. Like, it feels like you could be dropped in there and you would know.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
And you mentioned this too before we started, but you kind of just hit right now the point of community and wanting to help your community. And one of the things that it was brought up in the book was that there used to be a group of like quote unquote superheroes, and they were called Los Máximos.
Yeah.
There's a scene in here where the girlfriend is talking with Monte about the stuff that is happening, and how there used to be the superheroes that her dad told her about. And they're talking about how the community has just been going downhill, and that they don't have these Máximos anymore, that they disappeared in 1957.
Exactly.
So that is kind of like a little nugget of like things that I feel like are going to be explored.
And I love that. Like, I honestly think that this might have been one of the best written comics that was picked up. Like, I love the others, but this one, like, has, like, real potential, like, to really go somewhere. To, like, if, like, man, if we're going to say, like, something's going to be an ongoing, that one has potential, because it gives hints, like, there used to be superheroes here, but what happened to them? Like, kind of a bit of a Watchmen situation.
Exactly, yeah.
But, like, Hispanicized.
And, it was, one of the things I think that the friend, the bro friend said, I forgot his name too, but he's like, you gotta do it yourself justice, dude. Like, you gotta step up. And he's just like, I don't think so. He's all, why don't you do it? He goes, no, it's your responsibility. You're the one who got these masks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's definitely a beta male. He's not alpha at all.
Oh, yeah. No. but we, but fortunately, as we proceed to read the story, we see him, that he encounters a scene where there's a gentleman who has a walker, and he obviously is disabled. He's walking on the street, and there's these three kids who look like hoodlums, proceed to start punking him and bullying him, and he's like, hey, stop it right there. And they're like, what did they say? Move
they
along.
Said, walk away, punk.
Yeah, walk away, punk. That's exactly right. But he's like, and then I don't know if it's that single moment where he just has the moment of clarity where he puts on the mask and he's like, no, I'm not going to walk away from this.
Yeah.
So I love this book, man. Yeah. I super loved it. I cannot.
I mean, just the
dialogue, the way it's written is just really good. I really enjoyed it. The writer must have some kind of like superpowers to just kind of bring, you know, regular banter, kind of beautiful dialogue, and just really. It really emphasizes the personality of the characters, and I'm already in love with it.
Well, I don't. This says number one on the cover, so I'm assuming that there are more. I'm trying to rack my brain if I remembered whether or not they had a number two, and I feel like there was another book on the table, but I don't remember if it was number two or not. But hopefully, we'll be able to. Follow up. I friended Bernice on Facebook, so
excellent.
I can just ask her about number two. and then we can definitely, and I meant to mention this too before we started, but we will include all the contact information for all these creators on our Facebook, and I'll try to take pictures of each of them and put them up on Instagram with all of the tagging the creators and connecting them to any of the contact info so that you guys can get your own copies as well.
Excellent. I love that idea.
Nice.
On the side note, I actually love the behind the scenes pages at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that because, like I said, I'm really a fan of seeing the process come to life, and I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. What was the last book we're going to talk about today, Kristen?
So the last book was, I think, my favorite.
My favorite, too.
It's a good one. I very much like it.
And when I was walking by the table, I saw this comic book with a picture of Edgar Allan Poe on the front, standing in front of a crypt, and the book said Poe Noir. And that was it. I didn't even have to open it and look at it. I was like, I'm buying your book. I don't even need to know what it's about. Give me your book. So
I like that.
The book is a small comic book sized book, and it has two stories inside. And the two stories, the first is called A Cask in the Crescent City. And the second one is Loving and Loathing in a Madman's Supposing.
I loved it. And you know what I really enjoyed about this? It's also that the fact that they give us the full story within one book.
Yes.
And the full two stories. So it's sort of, I guess, it's going to be like what Twilight Zone, where you get like the full story in one episode. Mm-hmm. So I like that about this. I like the fact that it's they're inspired by works by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
And let me just... Do you guys want to start or do you want me to start? Because I love this book.
No. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You know, the first page you see is just a white font and a black page. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I haven't even opened my mind to anything. I'm just reading these words in this beautiful font. And then you turn the page and my God, let me tell you, that first turn, I was just... Artist dude, my God. You blew me away. I was just completely like struck by these first two pages of drawings.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of content in it. Every space is taken up by something, but it's clearly visible and you can see what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the art is by Graham Sisk. And the stories are written by Tim, I think I want to say Zahak. If you read it without the accent, it would be Zajac. But I don't know how he pronounces it. I didn't ask him. But art by Graham Sisk. Graham is the art dude, and he is amazing.
Oh my God, and you know what?
It's just black and white. There's so no beautiful color at all, which really lends itself to the whole noir feeling of this book. But the things that he does with the black and the white and just it's just black and white, but there's really a tone feeling to
it. And there's a lot of depth, too. It's not just kind of just, you know, two-dimensional.
Absolutely,
I mean, it really jumps at you. Mm-hmm. Like I said, just turning the page, I was just like, dumbstruck. I was like, whoa. I've never seen anything like that.
Yes. So, I don't think I have either. You know what it reminds me of? Uh-huh. It reminds me of the black felt poster.
Oh, yeah.
When you were a kid, when I was a kid, I used to buy them to, like, paint.
Color.
Color. Yeah, uh-huh. This is what it looks like before you would color it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But just, like, the detail in just black and white that he is able to show is amazing.
Yeah, and it shows like a third dimensional kind of feel. It doesn't feel flat at all. It feels really full of dimension.
Mm-hmm.
What I was looking at, what I felt was that there's a white paint over black paint, and I felt like he was etching the color into it to bring out the black. I don't know, that's just the feel I got, but I just loved it.
Yeah,
love the art.
Oh, absolutely. There's something almost like, it feels almost like stripped and raw.
Yes.
It's so stark and almost like cutting. It's very, very much something that you would think of with noir, and I do love that artwork. It's so captivating, and it's just, and it like, in, if you win, like, sometimes in art, like, when you go into it and you, like, look at it and you can just see, like, blurry little outlines that people, like, from a distance, it actually does look like people. But when you look closer, there's no features. In this one, when you look closely, the features are still there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They're small, but they're still there. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, amazing how he was able to do that.
And what I feel about this particular comic book, I felt that this was the best marriage of dialogue and image of the three. I think it was such a wonderful, just kind of like a wonderful pairing, a wonderful marriage between the writer and the artist. Absolutely. I love the stories themselves were really good. I felt they were very dark and eerie. Mm-hmm. Sort of like that weird darkness everyone has inside them.
Yeah.
We can actually see it in these pages. I totally love them. It's easy to read because they did such a good job with putting the paneling with the wordings. So I really enjoyed this book.
So it was just flows naturally.
Yeah, it really flowed naturally. Mm-hmm.
So each of the stories in the book are inspired by actual Edgar Allan Poe stories. And the first one, which was the Cask in the Crescent City, was inspired by the Poe story, The Cask of Amontillado. And then the second one, which was the Loving, I love this title, Loving and Loathing in a Madman Supposing, was inspired by Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you've read both of those stories, the artist does such an excellent job incorporating components of each of those stories into each of the ones that are here in the book through the art. Mm-hmm. When you actually are reading the Poe stories and then you come and you read here, you can see that just the story is being told through the picture so well in collaboration with the original Poe story.
Oh, nice. I haven't read the original Poe stories, but that's something that this book would inspire me to do.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. That, and it's just, I feel like you get the gist of the Poe stories in it, but it definitely helps if you've read, like, if you've read the Poe stories, you can see the similarities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, the allusions to,
yes,
what has happened in the original story. And that in itself is amazing. They did such a great job with,
yeah,
that. But just, you don't need to have read the Poe,
no,
stories.
No, you don't.
Because the story itself has it, and
mm-hmm,
you can get a gist of it, but I would recommend, like, reading it just to, like, fully capture just that eeriness,
yeah,
that Edgar Allan Poe was known for.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm, I just love it so much.
The interesting thing when you kind of do some research about the second story, which is The Black Cat. The Black Cat was actually deemed to kind of be like a follow-up story to Telltale Heart.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah, so the story is supposed to be kind of like the development of the guilt that the murderer feels for what he did, mm-hmm, and how it just eats him up from the inside out. So I think that was, when I read that, I thought that was really super interesting, because Telltale Heart is one of, I think, the most widely well-known of Poe's stories.
Mm-hmm.
We all had to read it at some point, I think,
Telltale
in our school.
Telltale Heart, The Raven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Classics.
Yeah.
I love, we were talking about this earlier, where one of the images, one of the panels in the book was an actual print that was sold,
yes,
at the convention.
Yes, I
and
wanted
that,
to buy
that
it.
We are, well, I'm kicking myself for not having purchased it. And I took a little walk around too, right before it opened. And that was one of the things that caught my eye was the actual print. And I said, oh my God, is this one of the panels in your comic book? And he said, yes. And I said, I am so amazed on how you push the boundaries of how people put the paneling,
mm-hmm,
in comic books.
Mm-hmm.
There is a paw of a cat, and within the paw are the drawings, and around it is the dialogue. But it's really they really pushed the envelope on this whole paneling, and I was just like so in awe.
Yeah.
And I was just commenting, and I'm kicking myself for not having purchased.
I know, me too.
The print.
And actually, the second story is written by Miguel Acedo. So different than the first person. The first person was Tim Zahak, and then Miguel Acedo is the Loving and Loathing story. And they had a special where it was the print plus the book plus something else. And I was like, no, I'll just take the book. Oh, no. I was like, man.
Now, for me, I actually like the second story a bit more, because it's also the one that freaks me out.
Yeah, it was pretty eerie. No. I was just like, oh, man.
And, like, I'm with you. I love that title. Loving and Loathing in the Madman Supposing.
Yes.
And it's just so good. Like, basically, the story is that there's a writer, and he's out of ideas. And that in itself, you got me. You got me. I'm
right?
already shook.
We're in.
Like,
yes.
Like,
we are there with you.
We are there with you. Like, the worst... I think one of my biggest nightmares is when I run out of ideas. Like, writer's block and everything. Like, but this guy, he's so anxious because he's hit it big. Like, you get clues that he's already hit
it
big.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so people expect that of him.
Expect greatness from him, but he can't meet it. And it's eating him up inside. It's utterly, like, consuming him that he needs to make something. He needs to do something. Anything will do, but it won't come out.
Mm-hmm. And the worst part, I think, is that he has such an understanding, I'm assuming his wife, is such an understanding and nurturing person in his life, but I think it frustrates him that she's so just supportive.
Yeah. I think he wants her to be frustrated with him, for not being able to produce his story. And it's really interesting what you were saying about how that's your greatest nightmare of not being able to come up with stories and with ideas. And I think to a certain extent, that's everybody's nightmare. And on a more grand scale, I think everybody's nightmare is in some way, shape, or form not being successful.
Definitely.
And not following through. And at the end of the day, you know, at the end of your life, looking back and saying, you know, what have I done? And I think that's one thing that really interests me about Poe's work. He really had this, like, deep psychological aspect to his writing. And I think every single person who reads the stories is able, I think that's why they're so chilling, is because they're able to identify in one in some way, shape, or form.
That was the thing about Edgar Allan Poe. He was able to capture these human fears very clearly, and it freaked people out, especially in that time era.
Absolutely.
Like, because they were supposed to be, there was this whole, like, modesty and everything of suppression, like, you, that these thoughts aren't appropriate.
Right.
And then he's there writing them, and he's just like, oh my God, like, how could you? But it's still so relevant because it's still so true.
Right.
Even though, like, you know, like, oh no, like, we all, like, know what we are and stuff, kind of, like, not really. And that's what I really like about this is that these are modern adaptations of these stories.
Yes.
I mean, the cask of
Amontillado,
it's set in New Orleans.
I love that too.
Yeah, it was great, and that's the thing that I liked, that how he captured the crowds.
Yeah,
in the imagery, I thought that was sensational.
Yeah, it's because the original story takes place in Italy.
Right.
But this one takes place in New Orleans, which has a heavy French and Italian, like, influence, mostly French.
And the whole Creole voodoo
history
that's there,
definitely.
Too.
And it's just, like, it's... So it's, I think, and it takes place during Mardi Gras.
Yes.
So again, during a carnival, and it's just it's so like even though it feels like it takes place like sometime in the 1920s or 30s, like during like maybe Depression era, like a mafioso era.
Yeah.
It's still like it still feels like modern. It's like modernism a bit, and it's very good, but. the Loving and Loathing in Mad Men's Posing, that one is even more so, because that one you can see is he's using a laptop. He's there's a TV. They're building a barbecue pit, a really like super modern one. And that one, like, it's like present. It's like, so it feels like something that you may would see in the news, like that something horrible, terrible happened, and it was like, how could this happen? And then
yeah, like little tidbits, like for instance when you see him look at his previous book and, when you see him look at his previous book and you see a picture of him with like good praises, like good reviews on his book, like the little quotes and stuff, so you know it's fairly set in like the present era for sure. But yeah, no, I love this book, love it. I can't wait to see what happens in like issue two, issue three, like if they're giving us a full story like this, it doesn't feel like I need to like wait to have the story develop. It's already given to me, and it does give me, even in the few pages that it had, I mean the imagery and the dialogue and the narration really get you in that dark mood, which is what they're going for with this. It's really great. I loved it.
So I don't remember also on this table whether or not I saw they had other ones. I think they were just offering this one, so I would be really interested to know if they were going to do anything else. I would love to see some other
adaptation,
some other author, and then with a noir twist on it. That noir thing really gets me, I have to say. I really, really enjoyed it. And if that's their shtick, I'm all in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here, all in. Y'all have my money. Y'all have my
attention.
Yeah,
take my money.
I know this is silly, but like even a Stephen King noir.
Absolutely. Like maybe they can do this in like a 10 issue and then go to a Stephen King one. And maybe then, you know, like just, oh, that'd be great. That'd be so cool. So, you know what? We didn't even rate these books.
I know. I was going to say that at the end.
So, what do we rate Quince, girls?
Well, Quince for sure gets my 3 conchas. I loved the lightheartedness. It's definitely an all-ages book, which I really love that. Whenever I can recommend a book to all ages, that makes me super happy. I enjoy the Latino whole quinceañera thing about it. So 3 conchas for me.
Yeah, definitely. I feel 3 conchas for me as well. I love this book. I love the art. I love, super, super love that it's in Spanish as well.
Oh, yes.
So it's something that I can even have my husband read, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way that a lot of the little girls came up to our table because they saw the ghost book on our table.
Yes. Yes.
And we were able to say, hey, if you like this one, maybe you want to read about Quince. So,
you know, absolutely great point, Sarah. The fact that there were so many young girls that came up to the table and were able to identify ghosts and to say that, oh, I read that, or, oh, my friend has that, or, oh, I read Sisters, and that they're already reading comics. That makes me so happy.
I know. It was definitely very pleasant to see that happening. And it was so cool to say, hey, there's another book you might enjoy, Quince. It's in the first hall, and they're right at the front. And then you kind of gave them the kind of spiel about, like, she gets superpowers when she turns 15. So I really appreciate that about, you know, about this. So I'm going to give it 3 conchas.
Janice? Just hearing you guys, I'm going to give it 3 conchas. Because I was stuck in between 2.5 and 3. Because I wanted a little bit more content.
Yeah.
But I, at the same time, it is in Spanish. Like, they added, like,
I feel like maybe that has something to do with why there isn't a lot of content. Because they had to save space for the whole entire book in another language.
In another language. And that does take up space.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were able to recommend this book, like, I was saying, like, oh, if you've read Ghost, you should read Quince as well. And I do, I appreciate what they're doing and what they're doing. So they get the full 3 coaches.
Yeah.
It's a good book. It's a good all ages book that you can give to your daughter, or you can give to any kid who just wants to read to help them learn.
And it's it full on. I'm very confident in referring them to read this book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the next one is Monte Gomez.
Monte Gomez, not Moreno.
Or Gutierrez. Or
it's supposed to be Gutierrez Moreno.
Right. That's right.
So Monte Gomez is the luchador.
Yes.
So Jen, we'll start with you. What do you rate this book?
This one gets the full three conchas and a champurrado.
I agree.
Really do love it, and I really, this one really like super, like totally feels like a superhero book. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Origin
story, yeah. Right here for sure.
Origin story right there for sure, and I love it. And we didn't even mention it, but I love the cover art. I love the
That's a whole different artist, I think, than from the one who's doing the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they said the cover art was by so-and-so, and I love...
K-Primed his cover.
K-Primed.
Yeah. I love this book. I agree with you. Tres Conchas and a Champurrado for me, too. I loved it. Like I said, the dialogue, had me at hello. You had me at hello. Just that this is a story, not about the story about the town I grew up in. It's a story about how I grew up in this town. Yes! I mean, so clever. And the dialogue with the girlfriend.
Yeah.
I can't praise it enough. I love it.
Well, I'm going to give it three conchas. I'm saving my champurrado for Poe. But I really did like it, and I actually would definitely keep reading. I want to see what happens.
Yes.
And I am really excited to learn more about Los Máximos.
Me too. Yeah.
I want to know everything.
Yes. And apparently, I mean, if it's Los Máximos, there's more than one, so
yes.
I guess
each
person
had
a mask.
Yeah.
So I really want to know what happens.
Maybe he'll talk his girlfriend and his friend into wearing a mask.
Oh my God!
A new coming of the Máximos.
Yes, I love it.
But how did they lose the mask? That's
what I
want to know.
It's a kind of social work.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
I agree.
Nice. Woof.
Also potential, yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
Okay, so, like I said.
Did you read it, Kristen?
What?
Did you read it?
Yeah, I said three.
Okay.
I was saving my champurrado for Poe Noir.
Mm.
Poe Noir gets three conchas and champurrado for me. I loved it visually. I mean, honestly, Luchador is in black and white, and so is Poe Noir. But they're so completely
different.
Very different.
Very different.
And visually, Poe Noir is just like, I can't even describe it. It's amazing.
It's more astounding. It grabs your eye more, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I definitely am a sucker for noir. I'm a sucker for horror. And so this was just everything that I love all wrapped up in one. So, Tres Conchas and Andy. And a champurrado.
Well, for me, I'm going to give it the Palanería. I love this book. I mean, oh my, cannot praise it enough. The art, the content, everything. It's just so me in 1994.
Yeah.
It's like 1994 me. So it's La Palanería for me, guys. I love it.
It's
I want to know what more can they give us?
Well, yeah. I know. I want more of this.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the red mask of death. Give me Silver Bells tolling. Yeah. Yes. I want it all, man. But it gets three chocolate chongas.
I thought you said chonies. I'm like, ooh, they come in chocolate? I've only had strawberry.
I'm pretty sure somewhere there's chocolate underwear.
I can't believe you guys know about flavored underwear.
Hey, man, I've done some risque stuff.
Oh, yeah, I say don't do it. It's not worth it.
Well, yeah, if you wear them, yeah, but...
It's just all bad. It's sticky. It's not... And it's...
I can't. Reviewing flavor. How did this go wrong?
I mispronounced what I was trying to say. Because I don't know, man. I was thinking like I was gonna say conchas,
uh-huh.
And then I don't know, but like out of somewhere, like I thought like I wanted to go back, like, to English. But someone turned to chongas or something.
Yeah. No, that happens to me, too.
But no, it gets three chocolate conchas. Oh, that's where I messed up, because I said chocolate. Yeah, I wanted it to rhyme, but no, it didn't work out.
It went horribly wrong. I'd like to make a special mention to Jaime Hernandez and Lalo Alcaraz.
Yes.
You guys made the con for us. My gosh. Like, if it wasn't amazing enough, you guys just, man, said it, you know, like, freaking to the through.
Yes, so we're on episode 14, and hopefully some of you have already listened to others of our podcasts, but number one Comadres y Comics podcast was all about Maggie the Mechanic, which is a Jaime Hernandez book, and we had the amazing opportunity to speak to him at the East Los Angeles Comic Con, and I'm telling you, I'm not even exaggerating that we all had tears in our eyes.
Yes, absolutely.
It was very, very emotional for us all, and I actually asked him about the story that we shared on our first podcast about whether or not it was true that it was his mother that introduced him and his brothers to comics. And he was able to confirm that that was a true story and talked to us a little bit about how his mother used to send his older brother, Mario, out to buy comics to come and bring home for the younger brothers.
Oh, that's so wonderful. He was super nice. He was nice enough to take pictures with us, and even though we were freaking out.
Yes, I was freaking out. You can check out the picture. We've shared it on both Instagram and on Facebook, but he was just so nice.
Super nice. And it was just so iconic to see him there. And he was there as a guest, as one of the people that came into the con, not as a person.
He was just an attendee coming and hanging out.
Attendee, that's what I was trying to say. But yes, I was like, whoa, that's just so... Wow.
So rad.
So rad. Yeah, I couldn't think of the word. Yes, rad is absolutely...
I mean, we chose that book because of the fact that it's just an iconic Latino comic creator, and Love and Rockets is just one of the first underground Latino comics that were really... became mainstream and has such big praise and acclaim even to this day,
and a huge following.
Yeah, a huge following still to this day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Also to Lalo Alcaraz, special mention to him because he helped me with my box when we were trying to leave the convention center after breaking down our table. He helped me carry the box over to the car. And then I realized who it was.
Yes. So Lalo is the first Latino to ever have a syndicated cartoon in a newspaper. And that's like a big deal.
Huge.
To have syndicated. But then to be the first Latino to have that happen, he draws and writes La Cucaracha. Mm-hmm. And his comics are very political. And it's really... cool, the art that he had at his table, very, very reactionary to what's going on in our communities now, in our Latino communities, with a lot of the immigration issues and things like that. And it just was really awesome talking to him as well. And we all bought his button with his iconic saying when Trump was coming out with all of these really negative laws and all the talk he was doing about being against immigration. Lalo came out and said, you know what, he came out with this great saying that if you're brown, double down, we're not giving up, we're gonna fight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
On a side note, I was telling my cousin, she graduated from Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania. I was talking to her about meeting him, and she's like, I actually wrote a paper on La Cucaracha.
Oh, wow.
We studied it. We studied it in our Latin, I think Latin studies, or, I can't remember what was the course she was taking, but, they said that they brought out some of his content, as far as to, you know, part of the curriculum,
right, uh-huh.
And she wrote a paper on it.
That's
and
awesome.
She's like, I'm like, oh my God, that's so awesome. Like, it's so cool. And I think it's great that they're teaching it at school, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the fact that they are teaching it in school, and that he's already such a, important and strong presence and force, in the Latino political environment, mm-hmm. and the fact that he was there sitting behind his little table, two tables down from
us. Yeah, I know, right? It's so, yes. Oh my God, it's some, I can't even wrap my head around it, and I was there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, just kudos to Peter Malini and all of the other organizers of East Los Angeles Comic Con. The inaugural show was amazing. It was a hit. It was a success. Comadres y Comics had an amazing time. I think we earned and met a lot of new listeners, and we definitely can't wait to do it again.
Absolutely. Please, please let us into the second one, the second annual East LA Comic Con. I totally loved it. And yes, thank you so much for all your hard work. It definitely paid off. So now we're raffling Spider-Man, guys.
Yay!
Spider-Man Piñata.
Spider-Man.
Does everything a spider can.
So the winner of the Spider-Man Piñata, is it Peter Parker or Miles under there? No, it's Parker.
It's Parker because of the
his outfit. His costume is red.
That's okay. We can make one.
So the winner of the Spider-Man Piñata is ticket number 206-7562. You are the winner of the Spider-Man.
Woo! Yes! Bravo! and now, ladies, we're going to do some beer tasting. I put it in the freezer. It's because I just said serve cold.
Oh,
so I'm like, oh, darn, we've had it out for an hour.
Oh, darn, we talk too much.
Drunk or quicker, what comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer.
Can't get enough of it.
Beer.
How we really love it.
Beer.
Makes me think I'm a man.
Yes, I love the can. It's the prettiest tone of purple, and the name of it is Haze. So I'm assuming that it's a play on Purple Haze.
Yes.
The
Purple
Jimi
Haze.
Hendrix.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to be playing Purple Haze in the background. Jen, if you can do us the honors of letting us know what we're drinking, it's right on the...
So, directly from the can, it says, we are excited that you are holding Treehouse Brewing Company's Hop Saturated Double IPA Haze. Haze is a soft and dangerously drinkable beer with flavors and aromas of orange juice, fresh peach, and papaya offset by a gentle bitterness. It is intensely flavorful, yet well-balanced. Haze is the result of our uncompromising dedication to fresh, progressive, and delightful beer. We hope you enjoy it with laughter, good cheer, and in the company of those you love.
Oh,
yes.
I love
it. I love that it says dangerously drinkable.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Because a double IPA is definitely dangerous. So for it to be a beer that I haven't tasted it yet. I'm just smelling it. And the smells is just, it's making my mouth water. And all of those fruits and those citruses that Jen talked about, like as she's talking about it, it just really like enhanced the what I was actually smelling. My palate was already looking forward to tasting it.
Excellent.
And the can itself, it holds one pint, and it is an 8.2
AB. Wow, 8.2 is really high.
Nice, very.
So
nice.
We'd like to drink to Compton Eric from the Mustache Pestash podcast. Has been our beer supplier for this evening.
Awesome!
Thank you so much. And if you guys are into beer tasting and beer beers in general, the Mustache Cash Dash also does a lot of beer tasting on their podcast, so look for them as well.
Okay, I just took my first sip. This is Kristen, and I would say that there is nothing on that can that is more true than the fact that this is dangerously drinkable.
Absolutely.
As it a is. Double IPA, okay, so IPAs are fairly hoppy. And a lot of people don't like drinking IPAs, especially like my mother is a Bud drinker or Miller Lite or Michelob Lite or whatever those light beers that's on sale at Rite Aid. And so whenever I hand her an IPA, the face that she makes is just like, ah, like this is horrible. I can't stand it. And so that's kind of like people who are not craft beer drinkers. That's the reaction you usually get. And it's kind of, I think, something that is an acquired taste for sure. But this is not that at all. And it's a double IPA. This is so smooth. It doesn't have that kick. It has an IPA taste for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it doesn't. It's an IPA after all. But there's no, like, really, like, surprise at all. It's just smooth, and it goes down so good.
It is absolutely amazing. I really love it.
It's delicious. You know what? That's it. Y'all have converted me. I'm going to drink IPAs now, so long as they taste like this.
Okay, so I can taste the fruit in there, the peach and the papaya.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good. And, I mean, if you're a beer drinker, you know that when you say that there is fruit flavor, it's not sweet. It's not overpowering. It's not a cider. It's just those very subtle hints of that fruit flavor. It's so good.
Absolutely. I agree. This is just, man, it just, I can't even, it's something else. It's very good. It's very delicious. It's very fresh. As a matter of fact, it feels like you got this on tap. And I can't even imagine it actually being even fresher than what it tastes like right now. Uh-huh. So I'm really happy. I'm really happy.
Me too. Compton Eric, you're the man.
Absolutely. The man. Thank you so much.
Yay. Well, he's a good beer picker. So I put my beer pellet in his hand.
Agreed. So what do you guys rate this?
I've never done a rigid before, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with rigid.
Agreed. This is definitely rigid. Even though it was canned, it feels like it came right off the tap.
Yeah, and just a reminder, our beer rating on the bottom is flaccid. And then we have initial, then partial, then full, and then rigid. So we have five levels, and I'm on the very fifth level at rigid.
Absolutely. And I'm there, too. I didn't think I could ever get to a rigid, but this is it.
Yeah.
This is it for me. Definitely.
This is definitely a rigid. This is really good.
And, I mean, when it says dangerously drinkable, I mean, an ABV of 8.5 is pretty high alcohol by volume content. And so if you're drinking a beer that goes down this smoothly and doesn't have that, like, that really tough, rough IPA hoppy aftertaste, and you're just drinking this beer and you're enjoying your evening or you're having it with a meal, and you just keep drinking and drinking, I mean, honestly, after one pint of this, I think for sure you're already going to be feeling it.
Absolutely. This is I think something you take out for that special someone.
like
let's say your girlfriend comes over and you know she's the one. You take this can out and you drink it together. That's how I feel. And
if she's drinking double IPAs with you,
she's the one. Definitely. I'm actually jealous of people in Massachusetts who can enjoy this on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I'm jealous.
I love tasting breweries from around the United States. Well, around the world, but it makes me sad for sure when I know that I can't get to them as readily as I might want to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I can't even begin to tell you where you can find this or anything because I don't know. I have no idea, guys.
How did he get it?
Do you know?
I think beer trading.
Oh.
So this is a special can. It's not like something that just, you know, you can pick up at anywhere.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Treehouse Brewing Company, I'm sure they have a Facebook or website or Instagram or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the laws are for shipping beers in the mail, but I'm sure that you can get your hands on it, and it's definitely worth it.
Absolutely agreed. So now, guys, we are doing, we're just raffling away everything.
Yay.
And the kitchen sink. So so now we're raffling off the Superman piñata.
I just realized he has the cute little curly Q. Yes.
Iconic.
It's a likeness.
Okay, so the winner of the Superman piñata with his cute little curly Q is ticket number 206-7712. And these people kept the wrong side of the of the ticket. So hopefully they have the ticket.
Yeah. Please remember, guys, have your tickets out while listening this to this episode, because we still have, I think, three or four more raffles to go, guys. Four more raffles to go. So don't lose heart. You might still win. In any case, now, girls, what is on your radar? What is on your radar?
Okie dokie. So, this is Kristen, and on my radar this week is a Aftershock publishing company number one that came out just this Wednesday, and it's called The Normals. It's written by Adam Glass, who you might know from being the executive producer of Supernatural, Criminal Minds, and also Cold Case. So he's a TV dude who is now writing for comics. He has written for Aftershock before. He wrote, actually, what was it called? It was the one with Teddy Roosevelt, Rough Riders. He wrote Rough Riders for Aftershock, and he's also written the that one called The Golem. Was
Joe
it?
Golem?
Joe? No, 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 not Joe Golem. Was it? Is it just The Golem? No, it's not. No, it's Clay something. I can't remember, but it's a story kind of about Jewish folklore of the Golem. And it was really, really good, and I really enjoyed it. So he's really hitting them out of the park, Adam Glass is, with his comic book career. And this one is his newest one out by Aftershock called The Normals. And it's a kind of a story about this family we're introduced to, and we are kind of taken along this ride with this family who basically has this idea that I'm going to read actually the little synopsis of the book to you, and they basically say, think about your life for a moment, the people you've known, the ones you've loved, and all the stuff in between. Now, imagine you learned that everything you believed, everything you lived, everything you felt actually never happened. It was all not real. But it is real to you, and now you must fight to save it and everyone you love. But to do that, you first have to save the world. Welcome to The Normals, an exciting new Rush of Blood to the Head series at Aftershock Comics. So that is kind of the little vague synopsis that it has. I read the first issue. It was really, really good. I really enjoyed it a lot. The cool thing about it is that it's actually drawn by a Latino. It's drawn by Dennis Calero, who actually won the Latino Trendsetter Award in 2016. And the colorist is a Brazilian colorist by the name of Adriano Augusto. So there's a lot of Latino input here in this book. And I'll just say that it's super creepy, and I really want to know where it's going to go. So definitely on my radar, The Normals, pick it up. It came out number one this week, and it should still be on an LCS shelf near you.
I love it already. My gosh. I'm a little tipsy from the beer, but it sounds really good. It's so vague in the presentation you gave us, but it's kind of...
Well, I'm not going to give it away because I want you guys to read the number one. But, yeah, that little vague synopsis, if I would have just read that, I would have been hooked. But after reading number one, I'm even more hooked, and I want to know what happens. And Adam Glass is just amazing.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait. What is on your radar, Jen?
Well, actually, I wanted to correct something from the previous podcast.
Okay.
I had actually mixed up the plots of A Silent Voice and Your Name. So, yeah. Yeah, I know. I watched too many things in too short of a fused them together into this weird amalgamation of something that is not real. But I still do recommend everybody watch Your Name and read the manga when we finally get it.
Nice.
But and if you're interested, just read the synopsis and you'll see where I messed up. But actually, on my radar is another manga book instead of an anime movie. This is a manga, and it's called The Ancient Mage's Bride, and it's published by Seven Seas Entertainment, and it is a fantasy series, fantasy shonen series, and it's so good. Like, manga is mostly kind of known for kind of having like a similar style. It's mostly about the plot that really distinguishes it from others, but for Ancient Mage's Bride, the artwork is absolutely stunning.
Wow.
It is really, really good. It distinguishes itself from everything else, and it's so good. So the plot for this is basically, it follows Chise Hattori, a penniless orphan troubled by visions. So sold as a slave to an inhuman mage, she is about to begin a strange new life filled with magic, fairies, and other beings of a fantastical nature.
Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah.
It's very, like, it's very vague, but it's very heavy on the fantasy, and it's really, really good. And the reason I picked this up was because someone recommended it to me on Discord that I'm a part of a chat room of, and they're like, you should read this because it's very heavy on Irish fantasy lore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the characters, or one of the side characters in the story, is this kind of vampire what she basically feeds off is like the life energy of people, not blood, but like life energy.
Yeah.
And they usually go after creative people, artists, writers. But the thing is, like, they feed off their life force, but they give them creativity. However, they die young.
Oh.
And she is falling in love with him, and she doesn't want to end his life early, so she's trying to leave him, but she keeps going back to him. And it's so romantic and so sad. Like, oh god, kill me. This is what I live for. And so that's why I picked it up, but it is an amazing series.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Definitely recommend.
Excellent. I love it. I love it already.
Mm-hmm.
What is on my radar? On my radar is the fact that Jude Law will be playing a younger Albus Dumbledore in the new, in the Fantastic Beasts sequel.
Oh, I read something about that.
So,
yeah, I heard about that.
Variety reported that the news, and then shortly after it was confirmed by Pottermore. He'll be playing a younger Dumbledore alongside of Johnny Depp, who will be playing the evil wizard Grindelwald.
Has Depp been in any of the other of the movies?
He was in the first Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, yes.
I didn't watch it. I'm not a Harry Potter guy or girl.
It's so good, though. So very good. J.K. Rowling revealed that Dumbledore was actually in love with Grindelwald.
Yeah. When they were younger,
I think they were like neighbors, and they were good friends. And she revealed that Dumbledore was in love with him. Although whether or not they're going to be showing that in the movie to tip off his sexual orientation is yet to be seen.
Interesting.
Yes, I feel that's like super cool.
Yeah.
I hope they do. People that were in the running for playing a younger Dumbledore were like Ewan McGregor, which of course didn't choose. They went with Jude Law. So congratulations, Jude Law. You're part of the Harry Potter world now.
Hey.
So that's my on my radar. I can't wait to see the sequel.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'll have to get into it. Actually, now that I'm all about books on tape, which is really CDs, which is at some point when I get a new phone will really be audio books.
Audio files.
But now that I'm all about that, that is probably the perfect opportunity for me to get into the Harry Potter books.
Yeah, definitely. Alright guys, now it's time to raffle the Green Lantern Jessica Cruz Piñata.
Which, FYI, you got props on.
Yes.
By Sam Humphries on Twitter.
Yes. Oh my god, we did.
I missed it.
It was so cool. I was like, Oh my god. It was just like, whoa. The guy who came up to our table was
yes.
Have you showed this to Sam Humphries? And we're like, no. Like, I didn't even think of doing something like that.
Yeah.
But he took a picture and he shared it.
Oh, he did?
Yes. And Sam Humphries was like, yeah, I'm laughing so hard or something like that. I was like,
no, but here's the thing. He tweeted us later. He said,
he did.
Thank you so much for covering Green Lanterns and Jonesy.
Oh,
and
I was just like, oh yes!
Oh my god, fangirl moment.
That's right, I forgot he did Jonesy.
Yes. Yeah.
So he listened.
He probably did. Oh.
Hello.
Our listeners are gonna go death at one point when we just go like screech.
We just fangirled the F out of
he sure did. Oh my god, I got a little sweaty.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm looking at her right now and I almost don't want to give her up. So, yes. Big props to Sarah for her Jessica Cruz piñata and for putting us on Sam Humphries' radar.
Yes! I'm so excited, guys. It was such a great moment.
Oh my god,
my gosh. If you ever would have told me that this is where we were going to be like a year ago, I'd be like, you're joking. No, this is
look
awesome.
At us meeting Jaime Hernandez and Lalo.
Getting tweeted by Sam Humphries.
Getting tweeted by Sam Humphries.
Yes.
My God.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Okay, so the winner of this famous Jessica Cruz piñata is ticket number 2067499.
Yes, congratulations, ticket 2067499.
All right. What do we have next? We have actually a brand new segment.
Woo! Exciting.
So, one of the things that we want to be able to do with Comadres y Comics is to really highlight the fact that the comic community is like a really awesome thing. It's a living, breathing thing full of tons of people, of which obviously Latinos and women are a big part of. But we also like to kind of highlight the fact that, unfortunately, there are still marginalized groups still within this community that definitely could still benefit from support and love from the rest of us. So what we are going to do is start a brand new segment called Juntos y Fuertes.
Yes, Juntos y Fuertes, guys.
Yes. So that's basically translates to together, strong and together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we today are going to start that new segment. And one of the stories that has been on Facebook and Twitter and just in the comic book industry websites a lot these last couple of weeks is the story about her name is Sophie LaBelle. So if you haven't heard, Sophie LaBelle is actually, she's a Canadian artist, and she is a trans woman, and she's best known for her her comic strip, Assigned Male.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't really heard of her before all of this really crazy stuff happened, and so basically what happened is that she was being victimized by a lot of hate and hate groups on the internet because of the fact that she is a trans woman,
mm-hmm.
and so much so that she was getting death threats And her actual physical address was being posted online. And,
oh, how horrible.
People posting saying, you know, she needs to die and all this other really horrible stuff. All because of the fact that, and the way she puts it is, because they didn't feel that she should even exist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that they were very just upset at the fact that she is not only a trans woman, but she's proud of it. And her comic strip, Assigned Male, really talks a lot about the struggles that not only she, but people of the transgender community suffer and go through on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I really wanted to share on this first segment of Juntos y Fuertes is that Sophie, she's fine. She actually has, she had to move. Her and her roommate had to move out of their home and go somewhere safe. But she has continued on with her comics online, and I think it's even given her just really motivation to continue going and for the need of her comic strip that's out there. And she has multiple things on multiple ways online that you can reach her and support her. She has a Facebook, obviously, but she has an Etsy store that you can go and buy some of her. Her books and her different artwork and different things on there. I think somebody started a GoFundMe or something as well. And we can put those links up on our Facebook. I think I shared one on my personal one, but we can share it on the Comadres y Comics too. But I just think that it's so super important for the comic book community to really stand behind the creators that are out there that are really being targeted and victimized, and especially the marginalized people who belong to marginalized groups in the comic book community. It's definitely, I think, something that needs to be highlighted and to give as much love and support as we can.
Yeah, I think I also read that her website was hacked, and then they posted a lot of like hateful things in there. I think also some Nazi stuff. I thought that was just, I mean, they really went really far.
They were, yes. I mean, this was not just a one-off, like, oh, some little hacker, this idea that just came to me. I mean, it seemed like it was really well thought out and implemented and carried out, like, over and above what somebody who just was doing it for quote-unquote fun.
Exactly. I actually read one of her little strips. It was when they mistake the gender of a dog.
Oh, yes.
And then when they say versus people. There was a little caption where it said, well, we just found out she's a girl. And then people was like, oh, I feel that I need to tell you that I disapprove about this. And
yeah,
it was like,
even though I'm a stranger and I don't know you.
Right. I feel like I should tell you how I feel about this. And I thought that was just like, that was my introduction to her work, and I was just in love with it.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, it's definitely, I feel she's really gifted.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And
I really love her style. It's kind of a real, like, cutesy, like, and very lots of, like, bright colors and stuff. I really enjoy it.
Kind of watercolory in some senses. Uh-huh. Really light and, but yet full of a lot of character and full of a lot of energy and a lot of, como coraje.
Yes,
I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I really liked it. So I feel that we should definitely shine a light on her struggle right now. And if you guys can find it in your heart to help out or read her stuff or maybe even just share her stuff with other people,
absolutely.
I think that would help out a lot.
Not only that, I think this really emphasizes a lot of people. We come across the argument that a lot of people say that, oh, it's just a comic book, it's just art, like, it doesn't hurt you. If that was true, then why do so many people get angry at it? And it's just that art and comics and all these things have a way of sending a message, of portraying an experience that no matter how, like, how it is, like, whether it be a superhero or whether it be something very much real as it is with her, it's these comics and these ways of artwork have a way of affecting people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it sometimes it can help pass on understanding, as I think she's doing with her comics and trying to explain this experience of how it is to be a trans woman. But, like, it's also, like, so much, like, you can get so much hate, but persevere, and you can do it. Like, it's possible.
And, I mean, who's to say some of her comic strips land on the hands of somebody who actually needs that kind of orientation?
Absolutely.
Or some people that might feel the need to express how they feel about certain aspects and then read the comic book and say, oh, you know what, maybe I'm doing this wrong. Maybe I should just be supportive.
Yeah.
It could change someone's mind. I mean, that's the power of art.
Yeah.
That's the power of comics. but I mean, I feel really strongly about this, and hopefully you guys can go ahead and check out her page and check out her books and check out her comic strips. And you know, hopefully there's a lot of positive energy, just like at the East LA Comic Con, and we can support each other.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And right now I actually wanted to take some time to talk about another one of the main reasons that Juntos y Fuertes kind of came up as an idea for us, and it was actually thanks to a listener who reached out to us after our last episode. We had been talking about Free Comic Book Day, and we were talking about an incident where my friend had mentioned that she saw the cute little dog. Well, Sarah, you said you saw the cute little crypto. Yeah, and I had shared a story of my friend who had been sitting next to Crypto and Crypto's owner, and I shared the story that my friend had said, oh, you know, I think she got offended because I didn't know who Crypto was, and I relayed the story that my friend had told me, and she was a listener. She listened to our episode 13, and she reached out to us, and she actually really wanted to clarify something and say that she was not being the term she used was she does not believe in fan shaming, and I had never heard that term before. And so basically what she wanted to clarify was that she wasn't fan shaming my friend that she didn't know who Crypto was. She used this term too. She was fan sharing. She was trying to educate her because she really enjoyed and enjoys sharing information about comics because she loves them so much, and she really has a wide breadth of knowledge of comic books. And so she was fan sharing. And I was really struck by the term fan shaming, because the reality is that one of those marginalized groups within the comic book industry to this day is still women. And as a woman who works at a comic shop and who reads comics and who is often around a lot of other comic book readers, I've definitely experienced and heard the term fake fangirl. And I think that's it kind of put the spotlight on the story that I shared, is that that was kind of like what I was implying was happening, was that there was some fan shaming going on. And we laughed and you know, we were being lighthearted about it, but the truth of the matter is that there's a lot of people who do fan shame. Mm-hmm. You just are barely now watching the Marvel Universe movies. You don't read the comics. Well, then you're not a real fan. Mm-hmm. Or, you're only reading, so-and-so's run, and I've read all the way from the inception of this character. You're not a real fan.
Right.
You only read, I don't know, what other kind of example I can give, but so many instances of people trying to judge you or anybody as not being a real fan, you know, bandwagon fan or whatever. And I mean, I really, really firmly believe that. I don't care how many comic books you've read or how many TV shows you watch or how many movies you watch, and if it's only the movies that you watch or only the TV shows that you watch, that if you're a fan, then you're a fan. And I think together the comic community should be more of a cohesive thing and not a finger pointing or a blaming or a fan shaming type of situation. So I actually really am thanking our listener for introducing me to that term, because I think it's a very valid point, and it's definitely something, it's honestly one of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast. I wanted to be able to to show and share the not only Latina and Latino perspective, but also the female perspective. And so I'm really super excited about Juntos y Fuertes, and I want to thank our listener who put that idea into my mind, and hopefully we will do it justice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been guilty of fan shaming. I would like to share a story of being fan shamed, but I can't recall one right now. For me, I've shamed a fan,
mm-hmm.
and I feel badly because you're right. Instead of just pointing the finger, for instance, they were just fans of a certain TV show, and I was like, oh no, you know, like oh no, and my voice and my like superior, I've read comic books voice. What I should have done is said, really? Well, you should read such and such.
Yeah.
Or you should try reading this. Or, you know, it'll have a broader explanation. I mean, you know, something more. And it was a woman that I fan shamed too.
Uh-huh.
So I feel doubly bad. So, you know, it could happen amongst us as well.
Yeah, yes. For
so,
sure.
Sometimes it's little slips. Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course, but yeah, no, it's really good to bring that to light because maybe you can catch yourself before you do it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
It's better. I mean, it's really hard sometimes to kind of think of what you're saying before you say it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it just spills out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really good that she brought this to our attention, and I'm glad that you guys came up with this, this segment, because it could bring little things that that go on in everyday media or with other, artists or writers or anything like that, and we could actually support them and
yeah.
try to be supportive and
yeah.
try to bring out good vibes and energy, dude, like for sure.
And it's just like the fan shaming. Well, I'm pretty sure that I did it when I was barely starting out with comics, like oh my god, like you don't read the comics, like who are you? Like, what are
you
doing?
Why are you even talking to me?
Why are you even talking to me? And I think we all have done that some point.
You
but
can't
the good
sit
thing,
with us.
Then we've done this, but definitely the most one that comes strongly to mind right now is something that actually happened today at the store.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's happened often enough, and I hate it so much every time it is, and it's customer comes and they go to our male employee first, and then they're so like they're like, oh, like I want this, blah blah blah, and then he's our magic guy.
Yeah,
he does not know anything about comics, and so then he directs them to me, and he's just like, they say like, oh, Jen's the one that knows everything that can help you find what it is that you're looking for, and then they come to me very reluctantly,
yeah,
and say like, so do you know anything about comics? And I'm like, did he just not? Did you just not listen to him? Like, am I not behind this counter? Am I not like helping other people? Like, you would see me helping other people find comics, and you still ask me,
yeah,
do I know comics?
Yeah,
I fucking work at the comic book store, and it pisses me off every single time. It pisses me off every single time they say that or they ask that, because it's always men who do it. It's never been a woman or anything, and it's or a woman or anything. It's never been another woman who does it. It's always men who ask me, do I know anything?
Yeah.
Like, not even, like, I can understand if, like, they ask me if I know about a specific character.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, because sometimes I don't, like, so, like, I don't really know much about the history of Spawn. I know who he is.
Yeah.
But, like, good luck asking me what it's about.
Yeah.
I just know it's about this dude that kind of looks like Batman?
Yeah. I think he looks like Venom.
Yeah, a bit like a cross,
like
so many of the '90s guys are gonna be like, "How dare you!
I know,
not know who Spawn is." But like,
You see the movie?
Didn't you see the movie? Like,
there's a movie. Oh, I didn't know.
It's on Netflix.
John Leguizamo plays the clown. But anyway, continue.
Like, my knowledge of Spawn is very limited, but I can still direct people to where we have our Spawn stuff.
Right.
I know where things are, mm-hmm. and even if I'm not totally familiar with it, I can direct them in the correct like way where place that we have them. So every time they ask me, like, do you know anything? Like, not even just like, not even like just that. It's like, do you know anything? I don't know, man. I don't know shit. Like, I don't know. I don't even fucking know why they hired me. Like, I'm just as clueless as you are, dude.
I'm just an ornament.
Yeah, I'm just here because of my looks.
I love that.
I often also feel, not so much now as much as I did in the beginning, because I honestly was standing on the other side of the counter and did not know anything about it. But I learned. But yeah, I have experienced people who will come up to me and ask me something, or I'll go up to them mostly and ask, can I help you with anything? And they'll ask me something, I will tell them something, and then they will turn right around and ask the same question to
a male counterpart.
and they tell them the exact same thing, and I get so frustrated with that.
Wow.
I actually live for when they don't know, and they're like, just ask her.
Yes.
And then I just look at them very smugly, like, bitch, come at me. Come at me! Of course, I don't say anything of that.
I think
loud.
This angry cat is just for you. Did you guys hear what is happening in Austin, Texas?
Oh, yes.
I have.
I shared that crap on my Facebook page.
Yes, at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, there's No Guys Allowed Wonder Woman screaming. Screaming.
Screaming. Yes, they were screaming. Let us in!
The Drafthouse event invitation reads, apologies, gentlemen, but we're embracing our girl power and saying No Guys Allowed for one special night at the Alamo Ritz. And when we say people who identify as women only, we mean it. Everyone working at the screening, venue staff, projectionist, and culinary team will be female. Mm-hmm. There was a big uproar about that. But in the Alamo's defense, they also encourage other parties to have an all-male screening.
Yeah.
So how do you guys feel about that?
I think it's awesome.
Screaming. Yeah, screaming. You got me doing it. I think it's awesome, and honestly, like, you know, like, if they encourage them to have an all-male one, like, go ahead, do your thing. Like, there's already a women one,
yeah.
So if you're, like, crying about it, just go do your little boys club shit.
Listen, Wonder Woman was created in 1941. The very first superhero team that she joined was Justice Society. You know what her role was in Justice Society? She was their secretary.
What?
The kick-ass Wonder Woman that you know, whether it's from Justice League or, I mean, from Super Friends or from any of the awesome books that you read, George Perez's run, in Justice Society, the rest of the team members went off to fight the freaking Nazis, and she stayed back to answer the phones and answer the mail.
That's terrible.
So 75 years ago, that was the role of a female superhero. Now in 2017, if a theater wants to have an all-female screening of a movie that celebrates strong women and celebrates female power, I say go for it. I'm behind you 100%.
What the fuck? I've always wanted to use that button. For me, I think it's great, but I do feel for the male workers. Like, they won't be able to work, you know? Like, they're going to have to take a day off. Which is not a bad thing in a sense, but, like, maybe they were counting on working that day and they can't. A lot of people are calling it reversed feminism. Like, reverse sexism.
Misandry? Look, okay. Oh, my God. I'm about to go off. Any reverse anything does not exist.
Yes.
Reverse racism does not exist.
It doesn't.
Reverse sexism does not exist. Reverse, Jesus, I don't fucking know. Like, hair color, I don't know. It does not exist. Okay? Okay. It doesn't. Like, oh my God. Ugh. listen to like a lecture or something, educate yourself. It does not exist.
I think that what Jen is trying to say is that for any ism to exist, it calls for one group to hold power that another group doesn't have. And I, as a strong woman who definitely has no problem standing up and standing up for herself, speaking my mind, you know, I'm feminist as all get out. I also know that still in 2017 there is injustice when it comes to women in our society. The men are still the majority lawmakers over female reproduction, over female health, and you know, there's still people who say it's not true, but women still do only make a percentage of cents to the dollar that a man makes. In the entire world, there are still mutilations happening to females,
the system, how they like don't even persecute rapists, even when they do child molestation, yes, or anything, they, you know what, 6 months, a year, I mean, what the heck is that? I
and
mean,
their excuse is, oh, it'll ruin their reputation. Like, really?
Yeah.
That's a person's life was ruined, and you're just worried about this person's reputation?
Right, yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so the fact that all of these injustices are still to this day happening to women, that is where it, where Jen is absolutely right. There is no such thing as reverse sexism, because for that to be true, that would mean that females hold the power over men, or females are more powerful in this society than men. And unfortunately, men are still seen as the stronger sex, as the more productive sex, as the more successful sex. And whether or not that is actually true doesn't matter. That is how they're viewed. And the fact that this Alamo Drafthouse Theater is looking to actually celebrate this iconic female character who was originally created. And you know something I found out too, that Marston, the creator of Wonder Woman, as we all know, if some of you don't, he was very open in his relationships, and actually was a polyamorous, and he had a wife, and he also had a second wife. That his girlfriend, his second wife, was it Betty Friedan?
It was
her daughter. So that's where she introduced him to the mother, and that's where a lot of his feminist ideas started, and then also his whole like affinity to being tied up and all that stuff. He really saw the woman in power as being something that was like a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where Wonder Woman came from his mind, and those were his ideas. And for it to really honestly take 75 years for that to have like really come full circle and to be celebrated is amazing. Like to honestly be celebrated and not pushed under the rug and placed into a secretary role. And case in point, actually, when he was pissed when he read and that happened, that he was so upset that that's where what they did with his Wonder Woman is put her as a secretary.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a lot to take in, listeners. I'm still kind of like, whoa.
Ask a question and you'll get an answer.
That's right.
I mean, I would really like to hear what other people think. And, you know, it doesn't mean that there aren't other opinions out there. And if you really feel strongly that they should not have done this, I would be interested to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. So now, guys, we are going to raffle the Wonder Woman piñata.
Yay, Wonder Woman! Miss Wonder Woman! Okay, so the winner of the very cute and very strong female iconic Wonder Woman pinata is coupon number 206-7718.
Excellent. Wonder Woman pinata 206-7718.
Another person who did not keep this coupon.
You know, and I think that was me doing it because I wasn't paying attention how I was ripping them. So okay. Yeah.
So long as they kept their coupon.
Right. As long as they didn't lose their red raffle ticket.
The red counterpart.
Right. Speaking of Wonder Woman, please remember, guys, that Comadres y Comics will be sponsoring some of the activities at Wonder Woman Day on June 3rd, 2017 at Heidi Ho Comics. We will be at 1431 Lincoln Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90401. And this is going to be a family-friendly event.
Yes.
As well as pet-friendly, and there's going to be a costume contest.
Yes, we're going to have cosplay contest for both pets and people. I can't wait to see all the cute little pets come dressed up.
Yay!
We're going to
have gotten very, very strong promises of people coming in with
their
pets.
Yay! Yes! And then also we're going to have trivia contest. We're going to have arts and crafts. We're going to have tons of coloring and activity sheets. We are going to have face painting, and we are going to have...
A photo booth?
Yes, thank you. I was trying to think what the last thing was. Photo booth, yes. Yay.
So, bring your kids and introduce them to comics and to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, so it'll be from noon to 4 on June 3rd, and if you are a DC fan... Everything DC, whether it be a trade, a single issue, a statue, a figure, a pop, anything DC will be 20% off.
Excellent. That's good news for me. All right, guys. And now for our...
We have Osito.
We have Osito.
Yes.
Osito. Can you tell us a story about Osito while she gets the ticket ready?
He's so cute.
He's adorable. So, Osito is actually the plush-like teddy bear that belonged to Bane when he was a kid.
Yes.
It is so cute.
He's so cute.
He's adorable. And, like,
and he's soft.
And very soft.
Yes.
He's very soft.
And he was sitting on our table at the East LA Comic Con.
At the East LA Comic Con. And he was dressed as a luchador.
Yes.
He's a luchador, Teddy!
And nobody knew who he was. And by the end of the day, we were like, okay, the first person that comes up and is like, Osito! We're giving him Osito or her Osito. Mm-hmm. And nobody did. We had one person that came up and said, oh, my gosh, how much is your bear? And we're like, first of all, tell us who he is. And she's like, it's Bane. I'm like, oh, man, you're super close. But that's not it. But, yeah, actually, there is a new Bane comic that's out. What's it called? Bane?
Conquest.
Conquest. And Osito, they show flashbacks of Bane as a kid with Osito, like held tight to his body. And he has him everywhere he goes. And as an adult, you see Bane speaking. And you can't – he's speaking to someone off panel and you don't know who it is, and then as you're turning the page you see the Osito with like an eye missing and like his fur like all like torn and stuff, that he's actually talking to Osito, who is he has under like a glass case, and aww, it's like so amazing. I was like, oh my god,
I died. I was just like, that's it. Like, if I died, I would have died happy.
Yeah,
like,
and so, oh, just a reminder, Bane is a Latino comic character.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so.
Who we might cover one day.
Yes. So, the winner of Little Cute Osito is ticket number 206-7664. In my opinion, you got the best prize.
Yes. Osito is so cute.
Totally cute. And now, guys, now it's time for our main main raffle prize. And what are we? What are they winning, Kristen?
So the winner of this main raffle prize wins a copy of each of the books that we had on display at our East LA Comic Con table. Each of us picked one of our favorite books that we have discussed in the past. And Sarah picked Ghosts by Raina Telgemeier. Jen picked Hellboy in Mexico, obviously Mike Mignola. And I picked Bitch Planet by Kelly Sidiklanis.
Hey.
So the winner of that set of comic books is ticket number 206-7691.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes, congratulations, ticket 206-7691. All right, guys. Well, that was a action-packed episode.
Yes, it was.
Like, completely, like, saturated
with
information.
There was laughter. There was
fangirling.
There was passionate anger. And I have to say, Jen, the way that you so eloquent and sexily read the back of that beer.
I know. I was just about to say, and one of the best beers we've had on.
Treehouse Brewing Company is going to start getting all kinds of calls for their Haze beer just based on the way that you read their can.
Why, thank you.
Also, really quickly, the name of the Adam Glass book I couldn't think of about the golem is called Brick.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Brick.
Yeah. Nice. Really good. The trade's already out. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. Well, girls, I think that brings us to the end of episode 14, the iconic LA East LA Comic Con episode. Do you guys have any shout outs or any?
I shout out to Peter Maloney and all of his helpers that put on an awesome East Los Angeles Comic Con.
Yes.
And I shout out to the Latino Expo that's going to happen in November at Mexican
Latin American Museum of Art.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
In Long Beach.
Uh-huh. And as always, follow us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Yes, excellent. And I'd like to shout out our neighbors, our table neighbors. Super nice at the convention.
Jen has a purse from neighbors that we had to the left.
It was totally cute. And the ones to the right, I have two libritos that were given to me, and I want to thank them for the present. It's very awesome.
Oh, that's right. His art was so cute.
It was totally cute. And I know you were interested in a female piñata, so just hit me up, and I will make it for you for free, and I'll send it for free, too. I know he said he would pay for it, but I would definitely make it for free.
Oh, what was he looking for?
He said he hadn't decided yet, but he was going to give it to his sister. So,
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you to you. Shout out to you. Thank you so much.
And follow us on Twitter at Comic Comadres for all the latest news.
We have a lot to share this time, actually. We have our books to share and all the contact info for all the people that we talked about today. Shout out to all of the creators of the books that we discussed. Fanbase Press with Quince and the creators. Kit Steinkellner and Emma Steinkellner. Monty Gomez is the luchador, with the writer Jandro Gamboa, y artist Bernice Talley, and Poe Noir.
Woo!
Yes, with Tim Zahak, Miguel Acedo, and Graham Sisk. Graham Sisk, you have our heart.
Yes.
You have our heart.
You had me at hello. Also, special shout out to Mr. Hernandez and Mr. Alcaraz.
Yes.
You guys were super awesome. Super awesome. Thank you so much. Also, guys, please remember, if you have won, please take a picture of yourself with a ticket and send it to us. Contact us whichever media you want to contact us on, and we can ship you your prize ASAP. Also, remember, if you still have a ticket, please just keep it on hand because somebody may not claim a prize, just like the Batman, and we will redraw to send a new winner out there into the inner space.
And also, I want to give a huge shout out to YNC Comics. Yuri was the woman who came by our, not only our table, but actually took her watchers, her viewers, on a little
East LA
tour of the entire East LA Comic Con. And she awesome. Just like Quince, not only does she do her show in English, but she does it in Spanish, too.
Absolutely.
She did the whole entire thing twice, in English and Spanish.
And the editing was really, really, really well done. She also edited, she also made an honorable mention to Monkey Monster Cosplay.
Oh, uh-huh.
Where she met Princess Loca, yes, and Han Cholo.
Yes.
Super cool.
Nice.
You can find her on YouTube, or we have also been sharing her,
yes, mm-hmm,
YouTube videos. So please check her out. They're both in English and Spanish. So if you see that we posted a Spanish one, it's good to go back into her channel and see the English version if that's what you prefer. But she was super nice, and I loved her energy. Thank you so much for highlighting us on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. And check out, I watched her video on the history of Wonder Woman.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, she did really good. Amazing. So lots of cool videos all about comics, and she is an awesome Latina woman doing this.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Bilingual. Really great. And shout out to her camera guy, which he's behind the scenes, but he did a really great job of shooting her. So thank you so much for that. Thank you to the LA Weekly for posting what you missed on.
That was great.
That was really cool. Jen and I were in the picture. I was like, oh my God, we're famous.
Yep, we're famous.
It was really cool because I had a high school friend see the article and then share it on my personal Facebook. So I was like, oh, people are actually paying attention. So yeah, shout out to everybody. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was really awesome. I saw that on your page, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, hey, where am I?
I know. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I sometimes, because I think you were like, because we were all talking to different
people. Yes, we were separate.
Yeah. Yeah, but thank you so much, guys. It was really awesome, and I feel like there was such a great, what is it called?
Energy, chemistry.
Yes, energy, chemistry. Everybody was
camaraderie.
Super cool. Camaraderie. Yes. Thank you. My God. Sometimes, guys, I speak English. But anyways, thanks for listening, guys. We have been your hosts. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.